Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Returning to civilian life after serving time in the military can be a difficult transition. There are the universal challenges of becoming reacquainted with family and friends, many of whom can't relate to the experience of being in the military, translating military skills into civilian terms to find a job, and even creating structure to make the most of your time. All of this becomes even more difficult if a veteran has served in combat, has PTSD, or is seriously injured. In our region, the nonprofit Heroes in Transition offers supports and services for veterans and their families. Joining us to discuss the many challenges veterans face and the work of Heroes in Transition is Nicole Spencer, Executive Director of Heroes in Transition. Welcome.
Good morning.
Do they call it HIT or HIT or is it?
Yeah. We call it HIT.
HIT, okay. And also with us is Tim Conley, a Navy veteran who also represents one of the many community members who volunteers in support of the work of Heroes in Transition. Welcome, Tim.
Good morning.
On the phone is Sheila Soares, the spouse of a young veteran who is a participant and supporter of Heroes in Transition. Good morning, Sheila.
Good morning.
So, Nicole, we had the founder of Heroes in Transition, Cindy Jones, on numerous times in the program in the past. She's still very active in the organization, but her schedule didn't allow her to join us today. So tell us a little bit about the story of how Heroes in Transition came to be.
Sure. In 2009, Cindy and Ken brought their son Eric home for the last time. He was in the Marines and a helicopter pilot, and he was killed in Afghanistan. And when they brought him home for the last time, they really felt that they wanted to do something to keep his memory alive. As Cindy says, and many of the stories that she tells, Eric always wanted to help other people. That was his main goal. Whether it was that he gave away his care packages that his mom and dad sent him when he was in the Marines, or just knowing when he came home that he had to get back because he wanted to be there with his crew, his family away from home. So they decided to start an organization that really brought that memory, kept that memory going. So they looked into the different programs that the federal and state levels don't offer. And at the time, they came up with the four parts, which is still our mission. So they decided to think outside the box. And in continuing to do that, we still have those four parts to our mission. And I'm sure we'll talk about them later today.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also think for Cindy, along with honoring Eric, it's sort of carrying on his mission. So she is carrying on what he started in a way.
Yeah, definitely. You know, she always says all the time that we're not the drivers of the boat. We just kind of navigate, and he's always up there telling us where to go and what to do.
Right. So for listeners who haven't served in the military or had a family member in the military, it might not be obvious how challenging the transition back into civilian life can be. I mentioned some of the issues in the introduction. Nicole, your brother was in the military. Can you share with us some of the challenges that he had when his service ended?
Sure. Adam came home, and it was hard to... We weren't a military family to begin with. He was the first person that served in our family close to us. And when he came home, we didn't really know what to expect. At the time, we didn't know of Heroes in Transition, and we didn't know what to do when he couldn't sleep at night, or, you know, it was hard for him to get out of the house, or wasn't talking to us. We didn't know where to go with it. So luckily... very luckily, a friend of a friend introduced us to Cindy and Ken, and right away that relationship formed, and Adam was able to be off all medications. He received the first PTSD dog on the Cape through Heroes in Transition, and it's just so nice to know that there's an organization that brought him from a place that he couldn't even, you know, step out of the house to. He now has a full-time job, two children. He's getting married in the fall or summer, fall. It's just wonderful.
Yeah. Tim, tell us a little bit about your military service and about your transition to civilian life.
Well, mine was easy because I was in from 1984 to 88, so relatively peaceful time compared to what these guys are going through now. And most importantly, I had that support system, that structure of family. I did come from a military family. My father served for 28 years in the Navy. Mother was just the greatest mom you could ever imagine. And so it was nothing for me to go away and come back. Mm-hmm. Now, I've seen countless kids coming home. I call them kids, but
they are a lot of times kids. Yeah.
And they come home all banged up. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's physical, sometimes it's mental. And it runs the scale of what happens to these people from just seeing something to experiencing something to doing something. And they all deal with it differently. And the support is the key when they come home. It takes Heroes in Transition. It takes a predecessor to that was a Falmouth Military Support Group by Carol Kenny, which mm-hmm. got me into the move here. It takes friends sitting at a bar talking mm-hmm. it out. It takes other veterans to go out with these guys. Just recently, last year, we went on a hunting trip, just some local guys, and it was a great day. Didn't get much, but at one point, end of the day, we had to cross this field. It was a large, large field, and one of the guys I'd been talking to all day, I just met him, he couldn't step out into the clearing. Mm. And we thought it was odd, and he pulled me aside and said that he was blown up in Iraq when he stepped into a field. Mm. And to this day, he cannot step into a clearing. If he's out in the field, he'd be okay. If he's in the woods, he's okay. But it's that transition going from the woods to the field.
Yeah.
Seems insane. It's not insane.
It doesn't seem insane at all to
because
me.
Because you weren't there. You don't know what happened. Right. And these guys deal with it in so many different ways. It takes time. It takes support. And Heroes is fantastic, from getting PTSD dogs to doing marriage counseling mm-hmm. to holding gala balls where people can get together and talk. Maybe have a beer. Maybe it doesn't matter. It takes all these different networks to help out.
Yeah. Sheila, would you tell us about your husband's military service and where he served and for how long?
Yeah, absolutely. So for him, he joined straight out of high school at 18. And he went to South Korea for a year. He was in Iraq and he was also in Afghanistan. And he served just under 8 years. So as you can imagine, you know, straight out of high school, you know, that's a lot to take on when you're still kind of developing as, you know, a young adult or, you know, going into being a man. And with me, you know, I had, you know, got married to him very shortly after he joined. So to, you know, be newlyweds and to be separated for a year. And then, you know, we had our daughter while he was still in. And, you know, he was gone half of our marriage, half of our daughter's life. Mm. And just being young, you don't have that maturity to kind of understand what you're going through. And at the time, I didn't even understand that he needed more support. I didn't realize when he came home the sorts of things that he was going to be dealing with and, you know, how he may act. And I didn't know how to react to him. So looking back, I can see how, you know, I maybe failed to recognize some of the struggles he had. But as we've gotten older and, you know, with Heroes in Transition or just, you know, utilizing our resources, you know, now I have better understanding, but I wish I had that understanding at the time.
Yeah. Also, big challenges while your husband was in the military. Here you are basically a single mom.
Right, right. And you're, you know, we were from Massachusetts, so, you know, our daughter was born in California. We didn't have friends, family. I was a stay-at-home mom, so I didn't have, you know, a job to go to work and, you know, relate to my friends or coworkers. I was doing that by myself.
Mm. Very lonely.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. Yes.
In 2011, the Pew Research Center published data that looked at the factors making transition to civilian life more difficult for service members. And the factors that ease transition were were experiencing a traumatic event, being seriously injured, being a post 9/11 veteran, serving in combat, or knowing someone that was killed and injured. That all makes sense. And then the circumstances that made transition to civilian life easier was post 9/11 vets identifying as religious, being an officer, understanding missions, and being a college graduate. So, Nicole, what do you hear from veterans and families about some of these issues and making that transition easier or more difficult? Do they kind of mirror what Pew is laid out?
I think so. I think it really depends on the person in their situation. I know that we had talked a little bit off air about, you know, different. It's hard because here on the Cape, we have a lot of Coast Guard families that come in and out very, you know, every 2 years. Mm-hmm. Their situations may be a little different than, let's say, the Navy or the members of the 102nd. Deployments are so different now. A lot of these deployed men and women actually deploy right here. Mm-hmm. They're doing missions on the computer. Mm-hmm. Then they come home, let's say on Christmas Day, and we don't know what happened in that mission. They come home and their family wants to enjoy Christmas Day. But on the other end of that computer, something terrible could have happened. The deployments are so different that we just, you know, we're still learning on how to deal with all of that and how to try and figure out how to best help. And I think it really depends on, you know, how and where and when. What I do know is that with the help of, you know, that support system, like mm-hmm. they said, it makes a huge difference.
I'm wondering, I know that you work with veterans of all ages, and it would seem, and I correct me if I'm wrong, that this younger generation has an easier time of talking about it or expressing it, where I'm thinking some of the Vietnam veterans and even World War II veterans, some of those World War II veterans have never spoken of their service. You know, it's like they no one's going to understand this except for another veteran, and their families are always surprised when they hear stories about, and Tim, you're smiling, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I think for some of the Vietnam veterans, when they came back, they were not exactly welcomed home. That was a very controversial war, and they suffered for that. And so I wonder your thoughts on that kind of, you know, those conversations between generations.
You're exactly right. I had an uncle who was in World War II, and he was one of the guys that took the glider over on D-Day. And he made it all the way up to the Battle of the Bulge before he was hit with a mortar. And he came home, went to work as an electrical salesman, built a great life, wonderful family, opened up a gym, Connolly's Gym, and helped everybody around. Never talked about World War II. Went up to see him just shortly before his death. He was in a hospital, and the nurse made us get out of the room so they could remove the shrapnel from his leg. This was 70 years later. He still had shrapnel coming out of his leg on a daily basis. Never said a word. Had a good friend from Mashpee, Ted, who was a Green Beret in Vietnam. Never said a word about his experiences. And they were, I'm sure they were terrible.
Oh, I'm sure.
And a lot of the guys that come home now don't want to talk either. Mm-hmm. And some can't stop talking. Mm-hmm. And it runs the spectrum.
Yeah. All right, a lot can change while a loved one is in the service. Children have grown and changed, as Sheila is saying. A spouse has likely assumed responsibilities. It might be difficult for the returning service person to know exactly what his or her role is within the family. Sheila, can you talk about how your family life changed when your husband left for the military and then when he came back?
Well, I do think even while in, it's definitely a big difference. Just as, you know, like a mom with a child, you know, I got into a routine with our daughter, and, you know, for him to come home, and I'm sure, you know, for other military members, it's probably even harder if they have, you know, larger families. We just had the one daughter. But just having him reintegrate into our routine while he was in, I think, was difficult. And to have that kind of say as a parent, you know, my daughter's, you know, been spending the past, you know, however many months, you know, listening to me, and then for him to come home, I think that's hard. In terms of, you know, getting out of the military, that was really all our daughter knew. So, you know, she didn't have that stability of, you know, a steady household that didn't move all the time, or, you know, her parents not moving around either. So for us, we were lucky that he got out before she had started school. But I, you know, for kids that are, you know, having to move to new places and meet new friends and start new schools, that has to be traumatic or just difficult. I know they say that kids are so resilient, but on the other hand, that definitely, I feel like it plays a role in, you know, how the kids grow up.
Yeah. And then just thinking from your husband's perspective here, he's, you know, he's missed a lot of those moments, which, you know, you feel bad about to begin with. And then he comes back and it's like, okay, what is my role? Because your daughter's used to going to you for everything and creating that new bond and, you know, setting up that family unit, if you will.
Exactly. And, you know, she, upon his return from his first deployment, you know, we went to the store and he needed to get a toothbrush. And he got out the car, you know, went into Target to grab a toothbrush. And my two-year-old, she's crying, "Daddy's gone, Daddy's gone." It's, you know, that has to be tough on, you know, the small children that don't get it. I know the older kids, you know, they kind of have that understanding. But little kids don't get that. They don't know, you know, she would tell people, "Oh, my daddy's far, far away over the ocean." You know, we were lucky enough that, you know, modern technology, we had Skype. She did, you know, get to talk to him and see him on the computer. But it's definitely just like a very different circumstance that's hard to kind of you know, put into words or to explain to civilians or anyone like that. And that is where, you know, Heroes in Transition comes in. You know, our children get to meet other kids that have gone through that, or, you know, we get to have, you know, other, you know, spouses that know what I've been through, or military member that know what he's been through. And that's, you know, played a huge role. I mean, just in general, to have in Massachusetts, I know we have, you know, like the Coast Guard and all of that, but we don't have, you know, an active duty Army base. So we don't have people that understand what it felt like, or, you know, what we went through. And the best part about, you know, Heroes in Transition is it's such a broad range of people. My husband and I are probably on the younger side of, you know, the couples in the group. So, you know, there's people as young as us, there's, you know, older couples as well. But we all have that one common bond of having that understanding. And with Heroes in Transition, it's such a casual opportunity to connect, and you know, you feel safe. It's not like a counseling session or this major like medical, you know, invasive sort of.
The pressure's off. And Nicole, as she's saying that, I'm sure you're relating, and I could see it's not. She says it's not a counseling session, but in a lot of ways, it is therapeutic, right? And especially for, like she's saying, some of these kids relate to kids. You know, I mean, you know, you can have these wonderful, you know, relationship and talks with your children, but when kids sometimes feel, I'm the only one feeling this. And then when they meet another kid who's going through the same thing, that's also therapeutic.
It's so true. And, you know, Kristen and John are couples facilitators. John is, he was in the military. He's a veteran. And, you know, Kristen and John have a great story, as do Sheila and Jay and so many of the couples that we have. But that whole group was started. And what Sheila's saying, it makes me smile, because all of those pieces she's touched on were things that we've really wanted to accomplish with the couples group. And over the, you know, it's been almost 2 years since we've done that. And not only have we been able to touch the couples, but bringing that family piece together, and I'm sure Sheila will, you know, talk about that later, but bringing that family piece together keeps families together.
866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join our conversation this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the many challenges veterans face as they transition into civilianship. And with us is Heroes in Transition Executive Director Nicole Spencer. Also Tim Conley, Navy veteran, who also represents one of the many community members who volunteers in support of the work of Heroes Transition. And Sheila Soares, a spouse of a young veteran, also a participant and supporter of Heroes in Transition. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Tim, in the military, there is this ready-made community, if you will, and a lot of goes into creating this the coercion within military units so that you can perform well regardless of circumstances. Did you find yourself missing the camaraderie and sense of shared purpose once you left the Navy?
Absolutely. That all starts at boot camp, where they break you down and then build you up. And it's all about teamwork. And it doesn't matter what branch you're in or what era you served in. It's always the same psychology. And then you make it to your unit, and it's all teamwork. And it doesn't matter if it's just offloading supplies from a ship or going into combat. It's teamwork. And all of a sudden, that's over with.
Yeah.
And before we go, I just wanted to say to Sheila, there is one job in the military, throughout all branches, that's historically the toughest job throughout the military, and it's the military spouse.
Yeah.
So thank you for sticking with your husband and going through everything you're going through and doing this as a team.
Yeah. So was it a challenge then for Tim, for you to find new community and that sense of connection once you left the Navy?
Like I say, not for me, because I personally had a great family. And I came back to Massachusetts, and I had friends, and I had a job waiting for me, and everything just sort of fell into place. Plus, like I say, non-combat, I don't feel like I went through the stresses that most of these guys are now.
Yeah.
And that's the key. And I think one of the stories I heard about Cindy and Ken was that's one of the primary reasons they started this. It wasn't just their grief and their loss. It was that they had the structure and support for Eric had he come home.
Mm-hmm.
And they met. It's sort of a ritual in the military. When you get out, you go and visit some of the families of the fallen. And as Eric's friends started coming home and visiting Cindy, they realized many of these kids did not have the support structure that he would have had.
Right.
and they felt obligated to help out. Some of it was financial, some of it was emotional. And they just wanted to fill that void for as many people as they could.
Yeah. Sheila, the military also provides structure that you know, often rigid structure for young adults like your husband who enter the military right out of high school. They haven't really had to organize and prioritize their time yet. Was this a challenge for your husband?
Yes, absolutely. You know, upon him returning, he did have a brother that was a veteran. I have a cousin that's a veteran. So, you know, we had a couple family members that, you know, had a little bit of an understanding about what he was going through. But also on the other hand, you know, finding other veterans that are doing well is also hard. You know, our family members were still struggling themselves. So for us initially, you know, we really didn't have any sort of military support. My husband did end up finding another veteran who set him up with a motorcycle club that's strictly for combat veterans. And then shortly after that is when we found the Facebook event for the Heroes in Transition couples retreat. So we had gone to a couple retreats while he was in the service that were, you know, they were called strong bonds, just like opportunities for couples to, you know, reconnect. And so when we saw the ad for Heroes in Transition, we thought that was very similar. And it was just great timing. You know, it was a couple years after he had gotten out, and we really didn't have any sort of, you know, military opportunities to discuss what we had gone through. So, you know, going to the retreat, hearing Cindy's story immediately struck with both of us. Mm. You know, we were like sitting there holding back tears, hearing her story and just seeing how inspirational her, you know, her mission is. Yeah. And then meeting Kristen and John and hearing their story, we realized how incredibly similar our circumstance was, regardless of the fact that, you know, Kristen and John are, you know, a bit older than us. And, you know, and John's time that he served was a completely different, you know, time frame than when my husband was in. But they still had that same struggle. They were a young couple that, you know, John had, you know, his own sort of PTSD and issues that he was going through, and Kristen didn't understand it at the time. And to see them, you know, being successful and helping others was an inspiration for us.
Yeah.
So, you know, after that retreat, you know, we went to the monthly meetings. We, you know, assisted in recording the RUC. My husband's gone on quite a few just veteran-only events with John. You know, we attended the gala. But for us, it was, you know, immediately after meeting them, we knew this was something that we wanted to give back to. Like, we want to, you know, expose others to Heroes in Transition. My husband invited one of his motorcycle member friends and his wife to the retreat this past year. I invited my cousin and his wife. My husband has brought his brother and his sister, who are both veterans, to a couple events with him and John. So it turned into something that, you know, we needed and that we felt so strongly about, to now we're at the point where we want to give back. We want other people to get that same experience that we have, because we know there's so many other, you know, service members and families that lost that connection with other military couples.
Yeah.
And so if we can, you know, find others that need that too, you know, that's what it's all about. You know, it goes full circle.
Yeah, it's also thinking of that, sometimes that loss of community when you return to civilian life. I'm thinking, you know, Sebastian Younger has written a lot about his experience with veterans in his book Tribe, and he talks about, you know, some of the guys that he was with and how some of them might have had struggles in civilian life. Maybe they had a learning disability, or they had this sense of not belonging. And then they go into the service, and even when they're, you know, having like a dozen firefights in a day, they didn't want to leave because they had a job, they had a purpose, they were part of this community. And what were they going back to? And I imagine that's got to be a really tough struggle when somebody is finding this identity in their service, and then they lose that.
I think we see that a lot. And I think when you decide to join the service, not that I have, but, you know, in talks with my brother and many of the veterans that we have assisted, that is their purpose. The service is their sole purpose for as long as they're in. Then, like you said, they, you know, they get out and we expect them to acclimate to where our normal is.
Yeah.
Well, our normal is never going to be ever their normal,
right,
because of their experiences that they've had in the service. So I think that is everything you said there was so true. It is so difficult, I think, to just find what the new normal is.
Yeah.
Add a family on top of that, a young family, add
Finding a job.
Finding a job, stressing about bills, coming home to family members that may never have met you before, you know, these little children running around. And I can't imagine going through that, but I know that, you know, we are here to help as much as we can.
Service members leave the military with a wide assortment of skills. Tim, did you find the skills that you acquired in the Navy were easily transferable to civilian jobs?
Oh, absolutely. There's a large calling for people running around at night on the deck of a aircraft carrier. Sorry. No, I had to switch gears.
So you're working at the sheriff's office. Was that an easy transition for you? I mean, I don't know how long you've been there. But
no, that was later in life.
Later, okay.
But again, that was more of that camaraderie and team spirit. You know, they put you through a sheriff's academy. We've got one that's out there running around in the snow today. Mm-hmm. And they break you down and build you up and try and make you a member of a team. And I think we're all looking for that. And it doesn't matter where your workspace is, whether it's the military or a radio station. I think we're all looking for a sense of belonging. Mm-hmm. And Heroes is just trying to help facilitate that. That's all.
Yeah. Nicole, what was your brother's experience finding work post-military?
Interesting.
Sounds like there's a long story there.
I think for him,
we'll talk off air about that.
I think for him, he's doing great right now. He's actually works for a building company, and he does wonderfully. For a long time, he fished, and you know, he always said, "Fish don't talk," and neither does the boat. Oh. So I think for him, that was his beginning of trying to figure out who he was going to become when he came out. To this day, even, you know, at the building, he's got a few guys. Their crew is awesome and very helpful. And a lot of them are veterans. So, again, that sense of team is everywhere. Tim, I think you're right. And, you know, even the fundraising events that we do, like The Rock, those things are team-building activities. We want everyone to feel involved. Yeah.
Sheila, can you describe your husband's hunt for work after he left the military?
So initially when he joined, he was a transportation coordinator. And so really kind of, you know, thinking long term, kind of a minimal sort of opportunity to kind of carry that over to civilian life. So halfway through, he did end up reclassing into an engineer with construction. So when he got out, he made the decision to get further educated. He went to the Heavy Equipment Academy in New Hampshire. And so he got out and he was able to kind of use his, you know, experience with being deployed in Afghanistan and using the heavy equipment there, plus, you know, the education that he got at the Heavy Equipment Academy, and using that to get his position that he's at now. He does work with heavy equipment. He works for the Taunton Landfill. So he's utilizing, you know, the bulldozer and the loader and all of the equipment that he was trained in during his service. But, you know, he has a brother who was he joined as a infantry soldier. And I feel like, you know, those are the tougher sort of positions to transfer over into civilian world.
Yeah.
There is no infantry job really on the civilian side of things. So, you know, we've seen, you know, other friends and family that didn't choose an actual job that really transfers over into the civilian world.
Yeah.
We have seen the struggle with other people, but luckily, you know, with my husband, he was able to find MOS that actually transfers over into a career.
Yeah. I don't know if this question right before, but what supports does the military or the Veterans Administration offer service members in advance of their discharge after they've left to help them transition to civilian life? Is there such a thing?
I would probably say Sheila's, Sheila could speak a little bit about that because they just went through it. I know with my brother, it was a few years back.
Yeah.
So
Sheila?
My husband's actually on the phone. I think he's going to chime in.
Oh, okay.
Excellent.
Hi.
So I went through the Veteran Services through the town, through City Hall and Town Hall. They have the Veteran Service Officers, and I went through them, and they kind of guided me along. And through the VA, there is a program called Voc Rehab, And for service members that have at least a 10% disability rating, they can sign up for Voc Rehab, and it's a great program. They basically sit you down. You go through a test on, you know, what your skills are and what you're interested in, and they'll basically set up everything for you. I went and used my GI Bill when I went to school through the Heavy Construction Academy, mm-hmm. but there were other service members there that, you know, didn't have to use their GI Bill, and they got boots, pants, you know, everything that they needed for the school, and at no cost. Mm. So there's definitely programs out there, and Voc Rehab is probably one of the best.
Yeah. Jay, do you want to just talk a little bit? We heard a lot from Sheila about your transition to civilian life. What were the biggest challenges for you?
Biggest challenges for me were just, you know, in the military, you know, we have that camaraderie. We have, you know, our brothers and sisters that we can trust to have our back, and we're always, you know, kind of there for each other. And I noticed in the civilian world, it's not so much that. It's more cutthroat, and, you know, it's not really a team experience. And,
Jay, is it also true that you got to modify your behavior when you get home? You got to watch what you say and what you do. I have a cousin who was 19-year Green Beret. He's got to write a book someday because he did some very interesting and disgusting things. But he said there's only a couple places he can talk. Yeah. If he lets his wife hear some of these stories, she won't be able to sleep with him at night because she'll be afraid. Yeah. And if he told his counselor while he was active duty, they'd kick him out.
Yeah. Jay, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, it's definitely a different environment. You know, nowadays, you know, people are more easily offended, and definitely got to watch what you say. And, you know, in the military, we're kind of just like no holds bar. Everybody just, you know, kind of says what they want. And it's definitely a different environment when you get out.
Yeah. Jay, thanks for calling in and talking with us. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about Heroes in Transition, which offers supports and services for veterans and their families. With us is Nicole Spencer, who's the executive director. Also, Tim Connolly, a Navy veteran, and Sheila Source, the spouse of a young veteran. Jay, who's also on the phone with us. And let's talk a little bit, Nicole, about the programs offered by Heroes mm-hmm. in Transition. Since we have Sheila with us, too, we'll start with the couples gathering. So first of all, tell us what it is, Nicole, and then we'll talk to Sheila.
Sure. About 2 years ago, we had spoken to a few people about trying to start up a program that helps with that, the keeping couples together. The divorce rate for military families is really unbelievable. And we knew that in our mission with support group therapy, we could cover that couples piece. Kristen and John Alexander. John and Kristen have been a part of the organization for quite a few years now, and Cindy really wanted to get that couples group started, so we asked Kristen and John to facilitate it. It really started as a small group that has grown. We've grown to doing monthly couples events, and we did that for an entire year where every month the couples would be able to go out. Starting this past January, we split the couples, the male and females. So every once a month we do the couples, and then the next month we do the split, the male and the female. So I think the activities, really what we're doing is going with the flow. Mm-hmm. The couples groups have become so, I don't want to say, you can always have a large group. Right. That's not what the word I was looking for, but I think they've come so diverse that we are able to split and do different things, still keeping in with that.
And covering a lot more territory. So Sheila and Jay have taken part. And Sheila, you've talked about this. So let's hear your thoughts on that from either one of you on what you've experienced.
Jay, do you want to go ahead?
I'll go ahead.
Okay. So for us, like I said, we had joined the retreat last year, or actually year prior, and following, you know, meeting everyone, we decided, you know, we wanted to commit to going to the monthly events. And it's, you know, the one thing that I try to explain to other couples about it is it's a guaranteed date night. And even though, well, not even just that, it's, you're with other veterans, so, you know, kind of on the ride there, you can talk about, you know, veteran issues. And on the ride home, you know, after, you know, sitting with the group and, you know, having, like, super casual conversations about, you know, military life, it gives you a topic to talk about on the way home, you know. Right. And there's another couple that they weren't together while the service member was in. The wife had, you know, married him shortly after. And so I had explained to her, you might not hear all of your husband's stories, you know, immediately. There might be random moments that he decides to share, you know, an experience with you. And those are the moments he needs you to just sit and listen. Yeah. You may not understand because you weren't with him while he was in. So, you know, it's been helpful to kind of just to go somewhere with other veteran couples. It does kind of spark your conversations.
Yeah.
With the couples events, it's like, you know, it's super casual. You know, you go, you do like a fun activity, you have dinner, but you're a lot of times you do bring up your, you know, military experience or just stories, because those are the people you can tell that to and they get it.
Yeah. Jay, what do you think about it? I mean, were you reluctant or were you game from the get-go?
I'm pretty open to anything that's going to benefit us. You know, we've been through a lot while I was in, and I didn't realize, like, you know, the retreats that we went on, the counseling that we did, like, while I was in the military, definitely saved our marriage. And I think that's the biggest thing, is you got to, you know, work for it. It doesn't come easy. Mm-hmm. And you definitely have to put in the work and the time to make it work. And as far as the couples events and even the veteran outings with just the male, as we went out as a group, I did enjoy it. And, you know, it really opens your eyes and lets you know that, you know, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. And that other veterans, you know, go through the same struggles. And some veterans are still struggling till this day that, you know, they can't be in public on their own. And I actually have a great friend now that I met through Heroes in Transition. And, you know, he didn't go out on his own. He couldn't go anywhere, you know, without his wife. And now, like, that we grew this bond together, you know, he's my brother now. And, like, the last event that we went out to, he didn't really want to go. And then I told him, you know, well, I'm going, you know, if that makes it feel any better. And he so, you know what, I'll go if you go. Mm-hmm. You know, and that right there, just like, now not only is Heroes in Transition helping me, but now I get to give back to the other veterans
help him
that are involved. And it's definitely changed my life, and I know it's impacted a lot of others.
Yeah. The FIT program is another opportunity offered by Heroes in Transition for veterans and their families. Nicole, tell us what that is. That's an equine program, right?
It is, yep. We've done this for many years now, and it's a one-week program, 3 to 4 hours, depending, usually from 4 to 7. We'll be making some changes each year, just as we do, minor changes. But the families come in, they get to do some riding, they have some family time. We do offer wholesome meals every night, because, as Cindy loves to say, that a meal brings people together. And it's really just, that's where you get the talking piece. We do offer some different opportunities. Yoga is offered for some of the adults. We do some kids programs so that the adults can go and talk on their own if they'd like. It's a very heartfelt event, I think. And then the families actually get to come together. Again, it's another one of those therapy.
Therapy doesn't feel like therapy.
Sheila,
you and Jay, your family participated. Tell us more about the experience for you and your family.
Absolutely. My daughter and I have absolutely zero background with riding horses. My husband, on the other hand, did grow up doing that. So you know, we have a 2-year-old son who was able to kind of stay with, like, the babysitter. And it gave my daughter and I some opportunity to try something new together and, you know, have that one-on-one, just her and I. And then my husband would come after work and, you know, he got to show off all of his skills. It was really awesome to watch him
was cool.
Light up on those horses. So that was really cool to watch. And then it was nice that, you know, like we got to do the horseback riding and then we got to do sort of family activities. We got to have, you know, dinner, as Nicole was saying. And then the split up at the end was pretty therapeutic, to be honest. It was, you know, the kids stayed behind with the babysitters and everything. But, you know, as couples, we went inside of this little house. And I want to say it was the first night that we were just sitting in the house and we were, like, breaking down. Like, I don't even remember what the, you know, the beginning story was. I don't know if it was just, you know, everyone kind of explaining their background. But a handful of us got really deep that night. You know, we, my husband and I were discussing, you know, his second deployment and how we thought he had dwell time. And we moved all of our stuff to Georgia. And within our first week of unpacking our boxes, they told me he was deploying. Mm. And, you know, hearing him tell his story, I'm, you know, tearing up, watching him tear up. But it was just a natural sort of moment that, like, we felt comfortable to, you know, discuss that situation. Yeah. There was another night that we had another woman do Reiki on us just for, like, some relaxation. And but, yeah, it ended up being, like, a really fun event. But at night when we got that alone time inside of the house, you know, I feel like we all let our guards down.
Yeah. Yeah. Sheila and Jay Soares, thank you both for sharing your story so much with us. We really appreciate that and appreciate your time this morning. I want to get to the Ruck for Heroes in Transition, which is one of your big fundraisers. Tim, you've run the Ruck on several occasions, organizing a team from the Barnstable County Sheriff's Office. So tell us more about the race.
It's a lot of fun. I'm still trying to get you to put this bag on.
Oh, my gosh. What does that thing weigh, anyway?
30 pounds.
Only 30 pounds?
Yeah. Well, it's a little over for training purposes. But the symbolism of the race is probably the most important part. Well, second, also raising the money. But the idea behind the backpack is to empathize with the burden that the troops are coming home with that we will never understand. But it's just some small way for us to understand. So we carry 30, and the smaller people carry 20 pounds. And it is weighed when you start the race. And we start at midnight or a couple minutes after midnight in Bourne. And we run around the Cape, completely around the Cape. And we run up and down the Race Point Monument and around the Coast Guard Station in Chatham and Sandy Neck Beach, and we're on a road near you. So if you see the people running, they've been running 24 hours a day in relay.
Goodness.
And when you get downtime, you're in a van with six sweaty, nasty people. So it's not much fun there.
How long does it take to finish that?
About 36 hours.
36 hours? Yeah. It seems like it would take longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
Take me longer than that, that's for sure. So how are you training for that? How does one train for a race like that?
Well, the taskmaster sitting next to me, is she's really good at that. I'm envious of some of these fit people who are younger than I.
I feel that. I feel your pain.
It's basic cardio, running, biking, and then a lot of strength for the legs.
Yeah,
I found last year that really helps.
And what is these all ages? Are these just adults?
I mean, well, they're all adults.
Okay,
I think
no
the
kids.
Youngest
okay.
one we've got is a 18-year-old mm-hmm. who's I'm not even sure he's on a team right now, but he's starting Mass Military
He'll
Academy.
Probably outrun everybody. Yeah.
Gazelle.
We're gonna put 50 pounds on
Kid,
his back. Kid
thinks he's a hero, but you don't know what you're in for until it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're in Eastham with a bag on
oh,
your back.
Oh my goodness!
Then
Nicole,
we'll see if he can run.
Talk about the different ways people can contribute and volunteer, even if they aren't running in this race.
You know, traveling through all 15 towns on Cape Cod, it's a challenge to find volunteers. And as you know, if you have volunteered for Heroes in Transition, you become the family of heroes. And that family extends really through all of the towns on the Cape. So if you're interested, we do have, we are looking for 70 volunteers specifically just to do each leg. As Tim said, we run in relay format, and that's 2 to 4 miles at a leg. So we have 70 exchanges. Mm-hmm. And we'd love to have, you know, one volunteer per or 2 volunteers per exchange. Ted Black and Kristen Black are volunteer coordinators for the Ruck, and they're just wonderful people. And we can get you in touch with them.
Mm-hmm. So do you have to create your own team? If somebody's interested in running, how do they find out how they can join?
Rec for Hit has its own Facebook page. We do that so that we can get more information out to people. It's also connected to the Heroes in Transition social media platforms. But it's Ruck, R-U-C-K, the number 4, and H-I-T, which stands mm-hmm. for Heroes in Transition. And you can just reach out to us there or at our email address, ruckforhit@gmail.com mm-hmm. to get more information. There is a lot of information out there, and we're looking to create some more teams.
So the deadline is tomorrow. So we'll have more information about the race and all the programs that are offered by Heroes in Transition at our website, capeandislands.org. Last couple minutes we have, I kind of jumped ahead about I want to make sure we got the ruck in
Thank
there.
Thank you.
But because we've done programs on the dog program. But tell us a little bit more about, that was one of the first programs that Cindy and Ken put together.
It was. And, the great thing about Heroes and the mission is that it's four parts. So we really find the ways to, when there is a need, we find the ways to connect with that need. And as we had talked about the couples groups, we felt that was a need over the past few years. The FIT program, we connected with that, and we actually revamped our canine program. We've found that there are more veterans that really just may not have PTSD or may not have a physical disability, but they want a dog. Mm-hmm. So we revamped our program so that now we have the opportunity to help veterans find a companion dog.
Yeah. And I would just say, just from the programs we've done on that, and we've had some of the folks in here with the dogs, mm-hmm. an amazing transformation in their life. I mean, you know, anybody who has a dog, who loves it, how much that has just changed your life. This is like tenfold what this relationship is with these people and these dogs.
It's true. And, you spoke about Adam earlier in the program, and Adam's dog, Tracy, I do believe saved his life. Mm-hmm. The great news is, our goal with the dogs is to eventually, these men and women that get the dogs, our hope is that they wouldn't need them in that capacity anymore. Mm-hmm. And, Adam's living proof of that. Yeah. He goes to work every day, comes home every day, and Tracy's now a family dog, which is, which is the goal.
Yeah. And when I remember a while ago, we talked about this, the VA wasn't covering the cost of therapy dogs for veterans. Has that changed?
They're starting with the ADI certifications now and things like that. They're really starting to crack down on the way they do things. And that's one of the reasons why we changed our program, so that we now are connected with ADI accredited schools. So with that, the VA can do a few things. If your dog is ADI, they're beginning to help with some of the financial piece of that.
Okay, they just don't pay for the dog. But
We know of at this time. Yeah. And that's, something that we offer. And, I'd love to say this because it's so important that all of the programs that we offer are free of charge to all of our veterans and military families. We don't, we don't ask for a dime.
I have to say, going way back when Cindy and Ken started this, it's just amazing to see how much this organization has grown. It's just such a great service that you guys do.
Well, we appreciate you just being there. Well, from the beginning.
Thank you. And Tim, thank you for your service. And Jay, I know you're not on anymore, but thank you for your service. And again, we'll have a link to all of these services and the info for the Ruck Race at our website. We'll also have a video of the Ruck Race in action compiled by our own Liz Lerner, Nicole Spencer, and Tim Conley. Thanks so much for coming in. Best of luck in the race, Tim.
Thank you.
Thank
I'm
you.
Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.